This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
We get the best start to the day because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
The Seattle Seahawks have traded the 144th pick to the Cleveland Browns. With the 144th pick in the 2025 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select Shedeur Sanders, quarterback, Colorado.
And there we are. Welcome to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. Finally, we got our answer, Pearl. Where will Shedeur Sanders play next year? It's going to be Cleveland. It's going to be awkward because...
Play. That's a... Ooh, or, interesting, interesting.
Okay, sorry. Where is he going to live?
I'm dying to know. He's got to get on the field at some point here, right?
So he's going to be competing now with Dylan Gabriel, who has taken about 50 picks before him, and you got Kenny Pickett, who's now the odds-on favorite to be the starter there. And
strange.
Joe Flacco, the veteran, the wily vet, who you love, is
Joe,
actually
Joe Flacco fourth. Has to start for that team. Joe Flacco balled out under Kevin Stefanski. He knows that offense. Why would it not be Joe Flacco from day one and then bring in a young guy behind him?
I don't know, but he's fourth in terms of odds of who's going to be the starter here.
Those
in
odds
the pecking
are wrong.
Order.
I'm going to bet. I'm going to throw some money down on this fictitious offshore book that has these odds.
12-1
Because it's got to be Flacco.
Okay. Well, the Browns of it all, we are going to address just about 20 minutes or so with Jason Lloyd, who covers the Browns for The Athletic, and just like how this whole thing's going to work. Who actually made the pick? Was it really Andrew Berry in the front office? Did Jimmy Haslam, the owner, come in and stop the Shedeur slide? At one point, Pearl, I thought it'd be no doubt Jerry Jones. I thought Jerry was going to come in and stop this thing because the slide was precipitous. And we're asking you today, why do you think Shedeur Sanders fell? It's a very simple question. It is not a simple answer. And I think everyone sees it through a different lens. You could see it as a football reason. You could see it as a fame reason. You could see it as a race reason. You could see it as a... You know, just everything. There's so much here. I see it as Dion and his camp totally misplayed the pre-draft process, and it turned people off. I think that's the first and biggest aspect to why he fell.
Yeah, I think that is underselling the Dion effect, because I also think coaches don't want Dion looming around. And honestly, Kevin Stefanski will lose his job to Dion in 2 years, so I think that was a wise choice.
You think so? You're calling it now?
I mean, that's like that was joked about on Twitter, but yeah, I mean, there's a good chance. Dion said, I will only go to the NFL to coach my son. Dion seems to, you know, if he can take Colorado 9-4, I can see an NFL owner saying, well, he can do that with a program that was 1-11. Maybe he could be a program builder. So I do think coaches and GMs, A, they didn't want Dion to tell them to play his son. B, they don't want him hanging around. Over his shoulder. Dallas.
So this is more of a rebuke of Dion than it is of Shedeur.
I don't think it's a rebuke. I think it's logic. I mean, there's no rebuke about it. I'm not saying that it's a judgment one way or the other. I think they're saying this is not going to be a good situation for me right now if I draft Shedeur Sanders. Like, for example...
Self-preservation
for the Giants. Like the Giants. I mean, how long would Dable last with Dion floating around? I think Brian Schottenheimer definitely didn't want the Cowboys to take Dion. I mean, to take Shedeur. I keep mixing him up.
I mean, Schottenheimer
definitely.
Well, I mean, how much power does Brian Schottenheimer have in the draft room? I doubt much.
But you're probably right. But I'm just saying, like, he definitely did not want Shedeur Sanders. He probably, he's a first-time coach. He probably said, listen, I'm an offensive coach. Please don't draft this guy.
Yeah, we can get into our winners and losers, too, and who actually had good drafts that we think, or which drafts made sense. We have no idea if they're good or not, but you need a couple of years to figure that out.
Well, let me ask about your Raiders, because Tom Brady's reportedly had a relationship with Shador and passed on him multiple times. What do you think happened there?
I don't know. I was surprised Brady wasn't in the draft room. I thought he was going to be in the war room on Thursday, the first round. We didn't see that. I mean, I think the simplest answer, they actually just want Geno, and they're gonna wait a year to get a quarterback. It's probably what happened.
Or unless Geno's really good, then they don't need a quarterback.
Then they don't need him, and they got Ashton Jeanty because they feel like they can compete right away. Why do you think Shador Sanders fell so precipitously? I do want to play the Todd McShay sound. So we've been talking about the pre-draft process, and you know, I don't think Shador believed that he was competing with the guys he was competing with in terms of draft spots. He believed he was competing with, like, Cam Ward, who will end up going number one overall, no questions, when he was actually competing with the likes of Dylan Gabriel.
Right. Well, a lot of us thought that because Mel Kiper had Shador as his number one quarterback, who's the preeminent draft guru. Ian Rappaport, NFL Network, Thursday said he's still in play for number three pick with the Giants. So everybody, we were, the media sort of, and I think a lot of people thought he is in play with Cam Ward. Like, that's the level.
Right. And it turned out that the football side of that was definitely wrong. Like, we can call that what it is, right? The football side, clearly he wasn't in the same category as Cam Ward.
Well,
because
you're saying that, I'm not sure I agree. Like, you don't think football-wise he could have been in play for the Giants if he'd done everything right?
Well, I thought so. But I think I was wrong about that. I think we were all wrong about that. Like, I think that what this has shown us is that, first and foremost, the football aspect, there was a wider gap here. Because here's the thing. If you are still really talented, right? We know he's talented. But if you are being thought about as the second best quarterback in the draft and you don't interview well, or you have a couple of, you know, people have an issue that you're flashy or whatever it is with Shador. I've seen teams take on guys that are 1,000 times the character risk that Shador appears to be. We've seen the NFL pro put talent above everything when they want to, it suits their needs.
Right, right. But there's also, they famously let the most talented players fall. Randy Moss went 18, Warren Sapp went 12. I mean,
18 and 12, that's not the fifth round. That's crazy.
I mean, but as far
pick as 144, like,
it's crazy to let Randy Moss hang out for 18 picks when you saw that guy on tape. Like, the talent was so much, it was crazy. You know, listen, these guys, that's a big fall. Like, Randy Moss should have been the number one pick by 50 miles.
Yeah, but we're talking about degrees here, and it's a different position.
Yeah, I'm just saying, but I think, like, that's a character fall. Like, Shador, I don't know if Shador. Here's the other question, too. Cam Ward, I mean, Cam Ward's good, but he would have been the sixth or seventh quarterback taken last year. I don't think there's that huge a gap, just to get to your point. I just think the Titans needed a quarterback desperately. Nobody had Cam Ward as a number one player in the draft. Not a single person. Did they?
Like, the best player in the
best
draft?
Best player of any position.
No, the best player we all think is Travis Hunt.
Right. I mean, Cam Ward was probably, eighth or ninth? But the quarterback, anyway, I'm getting off point here. I just think that Shador probably was pretty close to Cam Ward. I don't think he's that far from him, football-wise. I mean, EJ, you're a Miami fan. Maybe you disagree. But Cam Ward is not, we're not talking about, like, John Elway versus Nate Peterman here.
No,
they're in the
same
league.
But I think if the football was really, he was that close to Cam, number one overall pick, right? Of this draft.
Right.
Then I don't think you get to five. I think that we've seen teams over and over again, they will, like, hold their nose and take guys that they know they're going to get blowback for, and they'll do it, and they'll do it with a big fat smile on their face. This was obviously the football side, I think, did play a factor, and a larger one than we thought, because if it had just, you know, the talent clearly was not the evaluation we all thought it was.
I don't think, I actually disagree with you. I think the NFL does look at character more than you think. I mean, Tyreek Hill was a first-round talent, fell the fifth round. Antonio Brown, first-round talent, fell the fifth round.
That's serious allegations against those guys.
Yeah,
not this stuff with, he wears a fancy watch.
Right,
you know, or blew an interview.
But the NFL will not hold their nose at everything. They definitely look at these things. I mean, the guy who this year's Mike Green had some terrible allegations against him. He was a top 12 talent, the Marshall pass rusher, and he fell. So listen, character
he fell to
does
the second
matter.
Round.
Yeah, I know. That's crazy. I mean, honestly, Jalen Carter, he fell to 10. There's no, or 9 or 10. Like, there's no way that should happen. So the NFL does take this into account. The thing is, Shador's not as talented as Jalen Carter.
This is what I'm saying. Yeah. I think the football aspect does play a role here.
You said that teams will hold their nose and take a guy. I think you're right. It's a calculus. Like you said, there are many factors. He just wasn't quite good enough to overcome the question marks about having his dad around. I think if he was 6'4 and played like Jaden Daniels last year, he would have gone number 3. I agree with you on that, but I don't think it's one or the other. And I think you agree with me. It's all of it. Like, if he was just a little bigger and a little stronger, then he might have been able to overcome all this.
And I think if he took the pre-draft process a lot more seriously, I think he could have overcome this too. I don't know if he gets into the first round. Maybe he was never getting in the first round, guys, because of football. But I think that if he had taken the draft process more seriously, I don't know if he's falling to 5. I want to play this clip from Todd McShay. So Todd, you know, Todd is the, you know, he's super plugged in, and he puts a name on this one. This is not anonymous. This is not, oh, some anonymous offensive coordinator told me. He says Brian Daboll outlined how bad the interview went. Here's what it sounds like.
Shador didn't have a great interview with Brian Daboll in a private visit. An install package came in. The preparation wasn't there for it. Got called out on it. Didn't like that. Brian didn't appreciate him not liking it. I've said this before, and it started at the combine, and a couple days after the combine, we I don't like saying report. Like, we don't report anything. I shared information that I got I know if I'm getting it, that information people that are in this business that are really great at their job and talking to a lot of the same people I'm talking to, and probably more. I know more.
Right. I think there is a football aspect of this, you know, where there were rumors, rumblings that the football side of this was not, in terms of the interview, was not like stellar, was not off the charts. And I think people were, I don't know if they were afraid to report it or Deion's, you know, relationships maybe played into this as well, because, you know, CJ Stroud, let's take that a couple years ago. CJ Stroud had this terrible score on this thing called an S2 test,
right,
which was a processing test. And that story went everywhere.
Right.
CJ Stroud didn't have somebody who was in his corner who may have had these type of connections. He was like a, I want to say air quotes, regular, you know, kind of draft prospect. And this negative thing, this negative report, went gangbusters. It ended up not being true at all. And obviously CJ Stroud is a franchise quarterback. But
why he went number 2.
Well, generally though, people, like, they'll report the negative stuff.
Yeah.
No, and Todd McShay is saying people knew that that Shador was maybe bombing some of these interviews and they were not being forthright about it. Or that he was, or the football side was not a first round grade and they were not being forthright about it.
Right. But yeah, I find that analogy a little confusing because CJ Stroud went so high, though. So nobody cared about the S2 test.
No, I'm just saying that it's not like like Todd saying that one wanted to report these negative things.
Yes, that's true.
Because
he's a Deion, right?
Shador was getting a little bit of the Deion bubble,
yeah,
a little bit of the Deion glow, and it didn't help him. It ended up being the detriment.
Well, people were, I agree with that. I think people were afraid to come after Deion because Deion has a microphone and he, you know, and I think that's why teams moving forward didn't want to draft Shador, because they know Deion still has that microphone. So if he's sitting on the bench, Deion's going to say, get him in there. And that'll force a coach to do something he doesn't want to do because of public reaction. So I think that's exactly why I fell.
Yeah. 888-710-4ISN. 888-710-4476. Coming up in the next hour, Amy Trask is going to join us. And I do want to ask her, because she was the CEO of the Raiders and she's been around a very strong owner in Al Davis. But also, how much do teams feel that outside pressure? You know, how much does that ever influence what a team may do? Because you're talking about Deion's influence.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, quickly, let's go to John, who's in Western New York. John, why did Shador fall? John, you there? John, I'm going to put you on hold for a second. Mo's in L.A. What's up, Mo?
Hey, I'm just calling because I think a lot of it has to do with Shador. I mean, he could easily said no to his dad and everybody. Getting his number retired at Colorado, what did he do to deserve that? Especially 2-3 months after the college season's over, You got great people like Tim Tebow, wins the national championship, a Heisman, and his number's not even retired. What did he do to deserve it? Then
wait, but hold on one second, Mo. To be fair to Shador, Hold on, Mo. You got to be fair to Shador. He's not the one who retired his own jersey. What was he going to say? Don't retire it? It's an honor.
Yeah, an honor you don't deserve.
Tebow has a statue.
Yes, Tebow has a statue.
He doesn't have his number retired?
And it's like a...
No, the number's not retired. Tebow's number's not retired.
Yeah, but the dude's got literally a statue of himself with a ball in his hand.
He does deserve that.
Mo, by the way, Shador is the greatest, by 50 miles, the best quarterback Colorado's ever had. His numbers blow away Cordell Stewart's, and his success was huge. So he could have, and he's, you know.
Well, there was people who won a national championship with Colorado.
But no quarterback has done one quarter of what Shador did. Joe Klatt stunk compared to Shador. I mean, he's by far the best quarterback they've ever had. So you could have gotten it retired at some point.
He had good numbers, but then he interviewed bad. Throws his offensive line under the bus against Nebraska, and the following week, he brings his whole offensive line to a press conference. He already started havoc there, and then he shows up to the draft with all this stuff in the background saying legendary. Play the game first, then consider yourself calling yourself legendary. Not that soon.
Well, Mo, yeah, I mean, he's a master in branding, thank you, and that's kind of this era, you know, and Deion was doing that back in the day. So I guess... Yes, there's a lot of this that I will definitely criticize Shador for, right? I think he was, but I also think that he was getting some bad advice, bad intel. You know, he was getting some bad, like, to not throw at the combine, to not, you know, be maybe taking these interviews seriously because you think you have it in the bag. I think he was getting coached up on that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. He's 23. I think he's responsible for that. At a certain point, like, you gotta know how to handle
it. Your dad's Deion, you know?
Yeah, but he's not a young boy. He's not a kid. He's actually old. He's a year older than Anthony Richardson, who have already killed for 2 years of bad play. He should figure this out on his own.
888-710-4ISN. I don't know if I agree with you about that, but 888-710-4476. Okay, so Shador's on his way to Cleveland. Jason Lloyd covers the Browns for The Athletic. We're going to get his thoughts on, like, how's this going to work? What's this going to look like? And who actually made this pick? Was it the owner or the front office? It's the Maggie and Perloff Show. Welcome back. Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff, recapping the NFL draft, which kind of became like a one-story draft. Whether you love that or whether you disliked it, the Shador Sanders story is just endlessly fascinating because it kind of has it all. And we're trying to get to the bottom of why he fell to the fifth round, which there's a ton of explanations for. But we also are trying to figure out how this whole thing is going to work in Cleveland, of all places, which is not known for being the quarterback factory, Pearl, that many may hope that Shador would go to. Let's get the thoughts of Jason Lloyd. He's a columnist for The Athletic, based out of Cleveland, covers the Cleveland Browns. Jason, thanks so much for the time today. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys? Good morning.
Good morning. So pick 144, Browns trade. They select Shador. Your first thought was what?
Oh, my God. I thought I dodged this last night when they took it. honestly, that was my first thought. If I'm being totally honest, I sit in my office, and I had the Cavs on one TV, the playoff game against the Heat, and I had the Guardians on the other. I'd stopped watching the draft. And all of a sudden, my phone went totally nuclear. And I picked it up and thought, you've got to be kidding me. And then my boss called and said, okay, off and running. So, I mean, listen, when they take Dylan Gabriel the night before, obviously people in Cleveland think it's not happening. And I texted an NFL coach who knows the Browns organization well, texted him late Friday night and said, okay, so what do you make of Dylan Gabriel over Shador? And the response was, the Browns need another distraction, like they need a hole in the head. And then here we go, you know, 12 hours later, for whatever it is, and here comes Shador.
Jason,
it's wild.
Was the when you were reporting on this pre-draft, was the plan in Cleveland to draft a quarterback in the third round and the fifth round coming in?
No,
I'm joking. Of course it was.
No, you know, but we did think they're going to take a quarterback, yeah, but not certainly not how it played out.
If you're, you know, we're going to jump right in. Like, how does this depth chart work? With is Shedeur Sanders a normal fifth round pick for them, or are they going to view him as a higher round pick because of everything that happened?
No, he's a fifth round pick. He's fourth on the depth chart. Now, that's not to say that he's not going to move up. Personally, I think Kenny Pickett is the starter as of right now. They pursued him as soon as the season ended. They gave up an asset for him. They gave up another quarterback for him. That's QB1 as far as I'm concerned. Flacco's two, and now you've got these two rookies. Obviously, that can change. That needs to change. The Browns very clearly told you they were not expecting to get a franchise quarterback in this draft. So they traded down from 2 to 5. They got a first-round pick for next year. That's when they were going after a quarterback. And everybody in Cleveland knows how much Jimmy Haslam loves the Manning family. And I've been watching Arch Manning since November, December, as if Jimmy Haslam has any chance of getting Arch Manning here, he's going to do it. So this is a quick audition for these guys, for both Dylan Gabriel and Shedeur. And it's kind of a tough spot to be in, but they're going to have to, like, if they carry both, first of all, like, Joe Flacco's got a $4 million guarantee. But, yeah, you know, you'd believe that you could probably trade him to another team if there's injuries or whatever toward the end of the preseason. If you're going to carry both of these rookies, you got to play them. The Browns aren't going to be very good, but they got to figure out what they have in these guys. Because, again, the plan, pretty obvious, is they have two that could be relatively high first-round picks to go get a quarterback next year. So they have to figure out now if either of these guys could be the answer. So I don't know how Kevin's going to juggle this because – you know, if Kenny's the starter day one to let these guys get settled a little bit, you got to make that switch, I think, sooner than later. And then which one are you going to? Are you going to give them both a chance? We'll see. And if Shedeur comes in and it's a total circus and they don't like what they see, they'll just cut him. He's a fifth-round pick. Very minimal ties to investment in him right now. And that's sort of the upside to where they took him is, you know, it may sound ridiculous. I don't think it's any guarantee that he's on this roster. But if he is, he's got to play at some point.
Jason Lloyd is joining us. He's a columnist from The Athletic. He's based out of Cleveland, covers all things Cleveland, but specifically covering the Browns. And Jason, you know, who made this pick? Because you're right. I mean, you know, Dylan Gabriel goes and you're thinking, let's turn the Cavs game on, you know, and yep, see what's going on. You never thought they would go dip back into the quarterback pool. That video of Andrew Berry, their general manager, has been circulating where he does this golf clap and it looks like he's in a hostage situation. Did he make the pick or did owner Jimmy Haslam make the pick?
You know, that's the million-dollar question. You will struggle to find someone who believes the front office made that pick. Now, the Browns will tell you that. Like, the Browns are going to fight this narrative tooth and nail, obviously. But ask around the league, ask around probably even inside the locker room, and everyone will tell you, oh, that's a Jimmy pick. Because he hasn't earned the benefit of the doubt, and he's done this before. So, like, he forced the previous front office to go up and get Johnny Manziel. He's the one that pushed the Deshaun thing over the line and wouldn't take no for an answer. Deshaun called them and told them no. And Jimmy wouldn't take no for an answer because Jimmy gets what Jimmy wants. So he just kept adding zeros to the check until Deshaun's like, yeah, you know, Cleveland's not so bad after all. So if you just look at how they have structured the quarterback room, coming off Baker, and Baker was a lot of chaos and noise and social media and all that stuff. And then you dive headfirst into Deshaun, and he's more of an Instagram model than he is a quarterback. And everybody knows about the off-field fiascos and everything else. Coming off of that, they sought out Kenny Pickett, who is as quiet as they come. He keeps his mouth shut. Everybody will tell you what a great leader he is, what a great dude he is in the locker room. And then they end up going and getting an adult in Joe Flacco, 40-year-old Joe Flacco, who the city of Cleveland loved last time he was here. Again, adult, great leader, knows how to meet his responsibilities, knows how to meet the day-to-day expectations on him. Go ask anybody about Dylan Gabriel. It's the same thing. Like, everybody raves about Dylan's maturity, what a winner he was in college, like this level-headed, mature, whatever. And then there's Shedeur. And I'm not trying to, like, it is what it is. Like, people love Shedeur, people don't like him. I don't care if you like him or not, it doesn't matter. The reality is there's a lot more smoke that comes with Shedeur than any of those other three guys. So they were very clearly seemed to be trending in one direction. They took a quarterback already, and then out of the blue, is this complete pivot. So yeah, I think it's a total owner pick because he's done it before. So how can you have any faith that he didn't do it again? But you know, at this point, it's here. It doesn't matter. They're both here and they got to figure it out now.
So Jason, though, sorry, Pearl, just to jump in, you're saying it's so easy for the Browns to cut Shedeur Sanders if he doesn't play well. If it's the owner pick, I don't think he's that easy to cut now, right?
Well, I hear what you're saying. And I believe the way Jimmy operates is like, hey, listen, with the value where this guy is, go get him and bring him in and then let's just see what happens. Because again, like, I think what's really pulling at Jimmy's heartstrings and all this is Arch Manning. And if there's a way next year, and listen, we don't even know if Arch is coming out, right? Like NIL's changed everything. Arch easily could go back to Texas for another year. Arch may not even turn into what everyone thinks he's going to be. But I'm just putting that out there is like, I think that's on the center of the dartboard right now in the Browns, whatever, in their entire building. Is this floating in this ether? Is this idea that they could be able to go get Arch Manning? So I don't think Jimmy is totally committed to Shedeur as his full-time quarterback. I think he was committed to the idea of, hey, there's good value here. Let's just bring him in and see what happens.
So, Jason, the picture you're painting is there might be the worst team in the league next year. Is that something?
Well, they're going to be bad.
Is that something Cleveland fans are going to be okay with?
I mean, they've been okay with that. They haven't been okay with it, but they've dealt with it for 25 years. And that's the thing I was actually trying to get across last week before the draft was they need to be bad. They are two drafts away. This was one, and the next one is two. Go back and look at their offensive numbers. It was horrific how bad their offense was last year, and their top two picks were on defense. What does that tell you about their intent of trying to fix the offense and win for next year? And to me, that's a, like, everyone gets upset because the Browns have been rebuilding for 25 years, and that's fair. Like, they've been a disaster. They throw up on their own shoes every October. But if we're being totally honest, from 2018 till last year, they were actually trying to win. From the time they drafted Baker and Denzel Ward in the first round in 2018, they have been trying to go for it. And they have exactly one playoff win to show for it. But they've been trying to move in that direction. It didn't work. The Deshaun trade absolutely devastated the franchise. It wrecked the franchise. Not only did they lose the capital of the three first-round picks, they still owe him $170 million on future cap sheets because they keep kicking the money ahead and keep kicking the money down the road. So there is a reckoning that this organization has to deal with from the Deshaun fallout, and it's right now. So yeah, they're going to be bad. They know they're going to be bad. They leaned into the fact they're going to be bad by the fact that they did what they did. And drafting, like I said, you trade down from 2 to 5 when an offensive playmaker like Travis Hunter is right in front of you on an offense that needs it, you move down from 2 to 5, which, by the way, I love the trade down because you got an extra one and you got an extra second round pick this year. It was, I mean, if you look at any sort of history of trades, to move down 3 spots for a non-quarterback, it was a robbery. So they did exactly what they needed to do, and then they spent the pick on the defense. So this is not a good team. They're not going to be a good team. They're going to struggle offensively. And the only concern I have, if I'm Kevin Stefanski or Andrew Berry, is Jimmy Haslam can sit there and tell you, you're safe, we're good, this is my fault, I did this, you know, we're going to fight through this together, I believe in you guys. He can say all that. The problem is I've spoken to people who worked in the building who said, I had my review, I got a glowing review. 2 weeks later, I was fired. So that's just the emotional reaction of an owner who sometimes gets in his feelings and does things that he said previously he wasn't going to do. So that's the risk if you're Kevin and Andrew. But beyond that, yeah, they're not good. They're not going to be good, and they know it.
Jason, last one for you. Jason Lloyd joining us from The Athletic, and we really appreciate this. So you said the Haslam family close with the Mannings. And this whole thing is kind of just treading water, biding time, being bad enough to get in position maybe to take Arch Manning. What's the relationship like with Deion, with the Sanders family, if at all? And handicap it now, Deion Sanders, future head coach of the Cleveland Browns. Where would you put that?
I honestly don't think that's happening. I truly don't. Because, again, they're not really invested or committed to Shedeur. He's a fifth-round pick. They really like Kevin. He's a two-time coach of the year. He had a really bad year last year. They all did. They overhauled the entire offensive staff last year to try and fit Deshaun, and it blew up. Now they're going back to what Kevin's comfortable doing, what Kevin likes to do. They're going back to the offense that made them successful here previously. I don't think that there's much of a relationship, quite honestly, between Deion and the organization. Deion met with them when they were at Colorado. The Browns took everybody to Colorado for the pro day, for Travis Hunter and for Shedeur. They brought Jimmy. They brought front office coaches, they brought everybody. So they had a meet and greet there, but I don't think the relationship is very deep. And, you know, there's no leverage or there's no reason to make that move. It's not like Shador is a franchise quarterback threatening to leave. You know, he has no leverage in this. He's a fifth round pick.
He's got the president. I mean, Jason, he's got the president tweeting about this. I think you're overstating how simple it is to cut Shador Sanders.
I really don't. He's not a normal fifth round pick. I totally get it. But at the end of the day, he's a fifth round pick. And I don't think he's going to be cut. I think he's going to be on this roster, like for the record. I do believe he's going to be in Cleveland for the year, because why not? Like, you're going to be bad. Why not? And see what you have. I just don't think that they have, at this point, certainly, they don't have any long-term investment in him. And I think they entered this. Remember, they already took a quarterback over him. So at no point did they think he was going to be here. So I don't think they're looking at him as the long-term franchise quarterback. Now, if he changes their mind with his performance on the field over the course of the next year, great. Now you've got your franchise quarterback and you have two high picks next year. But I don't think they're looking at it that way right now.
Jason Lloyd, you can read him in The Athletic, a columnist covering Cleveland, covering the Browns. Thank you so much for your perspective. And things got a whole lot more interesting for this season. So have fun with that.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Jason. Let's turn to Andrew Bogish, who has headlines for us on this very busy Monday.
Guys, LeBron giveth and LeBron taketh away. 27 points, 12 rebounds, 8 assists, and some key defensive plays late in Game 4 in Minneapolis yesterday afternoon. But there were also some mistakes in the final moments that helped the Lakers lose 116-113, dropping into a 3-1 hole to the T-Wolves.
Won the game, but it wasn't like they, you know, completely pulled away. I mean, they won the game, but they just made it couple more opportunities. You know, we had opportunities to win. You know, we just couldn't close it.
Neither LeBron nor Luka took the final shot yesterday. They both passed, leading to an Austin Reeves corner three that missed at the buzzer. There were also 43 points from Anthony Edwards.
Quick question. Would Michael Jordan have passed on that three?
Oh, my goodness. Please stop.
Come on. Everyone else was doing it. I want to jump in on that.
It was the right play.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't shoot.
I mean, that being said, Luka he should have gotten was double, triple.
The whole Lakers offense got stuck in the right hand corner, yep. Like space a little bit, get LeBron or Luka a shot. Although Austin Reeves almost went in.
LeBron made the absolute right play there.
He might have made the no. The offense was a mess. The spacing was terrible. They should have done that. Whole play was messed up. In fact, the whole last 10 seconds of the game was a disaster.
Well, maybe you shouldn't play LeBron James 24 straight minutes in the second half.
It's always someone else's fault.
It was LeBron's fault that he turned the ball over on an inbounds play.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's where the game was lost, in my opinion.
We don't have this thing with Michael Jordan because he never lost in the playoffs, so right. We can't have this discussion.
Literally never lost a game.
Oh, sure.
I see that was the first time ever in recorded NBA history that the same five guys played the entire second half of a playoff game for the Lakers?
They did definitely play the whole second half. I don't know if that was the first time.
Time since some other number.
That they can confirm that it happened.
They're tracking box scores.
Yeah. Right.
Wow. Okay. It's been a while. It's ridiculous. I understand that the Lakers have a short rotation and that Jackson Hayes can't be played, but I mean, LeBron's 40. You can't play him for 24 minutes in a row.
Damian Lillard suffered a likely torn Achilles late first quarter last night with the Pacers. His Bucks never really recovered, losing 129-103 at home. They're in a 3-1 hole as well. Doc Rivers on the gut punch.
Thought our guys tried, but it was tough. You know, all of them are in there at halftime, you know, in the training room. You know, really tough to talk to a team, you know, after that.
Lillard suffered the apparent major injury in just his third game back from that blood clot in his leg. Jason Tatum scored 37 in the Celtics' 107-98 win in Orlando, and Jalen Brunson and Karl-Anthony Towns combining for 59 points as the Knicks escaped Detroit 94-93. New York and Boston have 3-1 series leads. Apparently, my son's 11U travel baseball team was playing the San Francisco Giants yesterday.
Ramos has been on base twice, and he hits a soft bouncer past the mound off the third base side. Jackson, he barehands it and throws it away at first. It goes right on by Berger and down the right field line. And now Ramos around second, heading for third. The throw, it goes wild. It goes over to the sidewall. He jumps up. He heads home. And the game is over.
John Miller on Giants Radio. That was an infield single and two throwing errors. The always fun Little League home run. That's how the Giants beat the Rangers yesterday, 3-2.
I love John Miller. He's so great. Why is he not on Sunday Night Baseball anymore? Am I opening up a can of worms that I forgot?
That's a long time now, right? How long? When did they pass?
Well, it was him and the San Diego Chicken, if you remember.
No, I unfairly skewered the San Diego Chicken and got him caught up in the Me Too scandal, which he wasn't. John Miller was not.
No, John Miller was not.
John Miller seems like a prince of a guy. He's so great at this. He's excellent on that call. Back to you, Bogus.
Washington Commander and D.C. officials are expected to announce this morning plans for a new football stadium where RFK Stadium currently stands. The team last played there in 1996. The Commanders want the venue to be open for 2030 and plan to hold concerts, Final Fours, other major events in it as well. Playoff hockey, the Kings were 20 minutes from a 3-1 series lead on the Oilers, but gave up two goals in the third, lost in OT 4-3, so that series is 2-2 instead. The Capitals and Hurricanes did get their 3-1 leads. Washington won in Montreal, Carolina won in Jersey, both by 5-2 scores. And Liverpool clinched its 20th top-flight title in England with a 5-1 rout of Tottenham yesterday. It's their second Premier League title in 5 years after a 30-year drought. Guys, back to you.
Bogus, thank you. Coming up, we do this every Monday, the M&P 500. Whose stock is up? Whose stock is down after a big weekend? You want to hear some Mel Kiper Jr. melting down on the ESPN set. You want to hear Bill Belichick in the most awkward Bill Belichick interview that's ever existed, and that's saying something.
Yeah, I was about to say.
And of course, we'll have more of Shedeur Sanders. Why did he fall to the fifth round? We're asking you today. And also, was this a rebuke on Shedeur, or was it a rebuke on Deion? 888-710-4ISN, 888-710-4476.
The M&P 500 on the Infinity Sports Network.
Okay, welcome back to the show, Maggie Gray, Andrew Perloff. We get back to Shedeur Sanders in just a moment. We're asking you, why do you think he fell to the 144th pick? But we do this every Monday, a little stock up, stock down, Pearl. You want to take the floor here?
Yeah, I'm going to do winners, and I'm going to go totally against the grain here.
Okay.
It's just an overall statement on draft. The two winners, the biggest winners, are the two best teams in the NFL, the Kansas City Chiefs and the Philadelphia Eagles, because everyone gives all the hype to the top five picks, like, oh my God, the Giants, the Browns. Guess what? They're going to be back in the top 10 every year from now on. The Eagles and Chiefs are so good that they could take two injured players that they're waiting on, and they're both going to be stars. And the Chiefs got Josh Simmons, who should have been a top 10 pick, but he had an EJ injury. He hurt his patella, and we know how bad that is. You know he's going to kill your Bills. And then the Eagles got Jahad Campbell, which is just a joke. There is no way he should have followed him. Again, injury concerns. So I just love, draft coverage annoys me because all the A's on these draft report cards are for the teams in the top 10. Those teams do not know what they're doing historically. The Ravens, the Chiefs, the Eagles, those teams actually won. I just want to get that statement out there. It's been bothering me for 4 days.
Okay. I'll get to the Ravens, but they're not going to be on my winner's side of this.
The Ravens? Boy, that's crazy.
I'll get to them in a second. My winner is Jordan Love. Jordan Love, with what was maybe a dicey wide receiver room last year, gets some major upgrades. Matthew Golden comes off the board with the 23rd pick, so that was obviously from Thursday. But then in the third round, they get Savion Williams from TCU, who's got size, he's got the measurables, and he, you know, never drops passes. Like, they are clearly getting Jordan Love more help. The Packers haven't taken a wide receiver in the first round in like 20 years.
Yep.
They decide to do it for Jordan Love. He's a big winner in this weekend.
I'll give you the first round guy, but they have nine other third round receivers, like 14 receivers in that room right now. But I do agree, Golden's a good one. And the fans loved it, obviously. I'll go loser. Obviously, I mean, I'm jumping on it before you get there. Quinn Ewers falling in the seventh round when he had millions of dollars sitting there in NIL if he just transferred. I had a preseason bet with someone I won't even mention.
Okay. Was it me?
No. Another broadcaster about who will go higher, Cam Ward or Quinn Ewers.
And,
it was.
And you had who?
I had Cam Ward a mile. This was before they even played. I'm like, because Quinn Ewers came in with hype, but man, except for all those dead animals who were the real losers in this thing. That were
I
behind
had them
in
as my losers. Yeah. Any animal in the vicinity of Quinn Ewers.
But Ewers is a class. I mean, he's the face of the NIL era going into the draft mistake. He's the first guy we've seen who could have made a ton of money, but he decided to come out because he didn't want to transfer because he had Arch behind him at Texas. What a mess for this dude. And the whatever animals was over there. Was there an antelope back there? There was a lot of things going on.
It was clearly he was in some kind of hunting lodge. That can't be someone's home, right?
I thought that was his home.
There must have been 15 dead animals on the wall. And listen, I'm from a place where people hunt all the time. I'm not a hunter. I'm not really that, but I'm from upstate New York and people hunt constantly, but I've never seen that type of display of heads.
I thought that was his house. You're saying he
was
somewhere else.
That would be the scariest place to live. You walk up like, everywhere you turn, some ferocious animal is like staring at you.
They're not ferocious. They're all some form of deer. And there's a moose stuck in there.
You don't think there was like a fox or a wolf or something? I think so. Anyway, we're doing the
No, they all have antlers. I'm looking at it right now.
All 50 of them all had antlers. Bambi. We're doing winners and losers, stock up, stock down from the weekend. We do this every Monday here on the show. I'm going to go another loser here. Couple associated with the Browns. Dylan Gabriel, I think, is a loser here. Because that could have been an interesting spot for him where he goes to the Browns and he's competing with Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco and it's kind of like business as usual, more or less. And then Shador gets drafted behind him and now this whole thing is upended because I think a lot of people believe that Shador is actually a better quarterback than Dylan Gabriel. We'll find out. But that's at least that was the pre-scouting.
I mean, you could argue he'll get a chance to play here maybe if you squint, but I totally thought the same thing.
And I'm going to couple Dylan Gabriel with Andrew Berry, who now forever will be memed as now it's Andrew Berry face. You know, the look when you're supposed to be excited about something and clearly you are not. And here is the Browns GM saying he feels good about Shador Sanders, even though no one thinks he made this pick. They all think the owner did.
He is probably a little bit opposite in terms of his personality of his dad. You know, obviously a little bit quieter, a little bit more introverted. But you know, we felt good with him. We felt good with him as a person. You know, he works hard. He's a really good kid. He wants to be great. His teammates, you know, loved him in Colorado. And you know, I know he'll come in here ready to work.
Can being quieter than Deion Sanders, like, isn't that everyone exists in the world? Deion's like one of the most outspoken, you know, people ever.
Yeah,
not just athletes.
It is funny. I do think maybe it dawned on me. Shador might be an introvert. There are even videos. Shiloh ain't. Shador might. A lot of actors are introverts. Like, he might be like.
You think he's acting?
Yeah, to some extent. Totally.
Interesting way to play this role.
I don't think he is his dad. I think he is a different person. I kind of thought that was an interesting take. Because we have heard that Shador is on the quiet side before. EJ, you've heard that, have you?
Definitely.
Yeah, he's definitely. And he's laid back. That's another term that people use for Shador. That he's not intense, which I think would have hurt him. All right, I'll go. Winner, I am going with the Dallas Cowboys. There's somebody in that building who is not Jerry Jones who knows how to pick certain positions. I don't know who it is. It's probably Will McClay. So they got Tyler Booker, which I tried to criticize on day one. That guy's going to be great. Then they got this pass rusher, Donovan Ezerico out of Boston College. They know this position. They got Micah Parsons. They got DeMarvion Overshawn. And then they got Chavon Ravel, who's a quarterback who all the draft picks loved. This team can draft. There's just no way around it, Maggie.
What happened to wide receiver?
They didn't get the wide receiver. They don't know how to build a team, but they know how to take certain positions. And these guys are probably going to be hits, just like Deron Bland was a hit, just like Trayvon Diggs was a hit, just like I mentioned Overshawn and Micah Parsons. They know how to get, and Tyler Booker's probably going to be a good guard. There's something weird about this team where they make smart draft picks, but yet they still don't build a complete team.
I got more losers for you. So we're going to dissect the whole Ulbrich family in the next segment. So I'm going to keep them out of this because Jeff Ulbrich is defensive coordinator in Atlanta. His son is the one who pranked Shador Sanders, saying he was going to get drafted by the Saints, and that ended up not being true. And then they had to apologize for it. We're going to save that for a second. I'm going to quickly go to the Baltimore Ravens. Say you guys have a zero tolerance policy against domestic violence, yet you decide to take somebody who's got two accusations against them. Now, to be fair, just accusations. Nothing has been proven. Nothing is good. There's no charges. Nothing. Well, there's no no conviction. Nothing like that. But you have this in your past, most notably with Ray Rice. You say you're going to do zero tolerance. No one was forcing you to take
Mike Green,
me, who had two issues, one from high school, then one going to UVA. I understand the high school thing. That's minors. But college is another. And then so they decided to take him. Did you also notice, though, that the Ravens took a kicker? I mean, Justin Tucker, who now has all these allegations against him because of how he may or may not have behaved in these massage sessions, kind of like shades of Deshaun Watson here. They decided to take a kicker out of Arizona, I believe. So interesting, weird, I thought, draft for the Ravens.
Oh, man, it's such a tough topic, though. Could you see, and I'm not going to make the argument here, that some great teams get guys who fall because of character issues and hope they can make them fit in?
Yeah, then just don't say you have a zero tolerance policy against domestic violence, and then do this.
I 100% agree.
Yeah, hypocrisy. 888-710-4ISN. We get back to Shedeur Sanders in a moment. Why did he fall to pick 144? We'll tell you what Perloff and I think next. 7 p.m.